welcome to the first edition of the Geek Generation podcast. I wouldn't say this is our official first episode since we are doing kind of a special thing here. We'll call it, almost in comic book terms, I guess we can call it the Zero issue. We're focusing here on the series finale of Lost, and joining me is the resident Geek Generation expert on Lost. You've been reading his articles, I hope, all season long for season 6. So, Douglas Clinton, please say hello.
Hello.
How are you? The first thing we're going to do in our episode here is we're going to kind of go over the things that happened in the finale. We have a series of bullet points of some of the major things that we want to talk about, and we're going to go a little more in-depth and discuss some of the things that's going on. So we see the opening montage, which is the images of the Flash Sideways universe, and going between those and their corresponding characters on the island, which I thought was an absolutely beautiful way to introduce the show. What do you think?
I agree, and it's something that I think, I sat there and watched the 2-hour recap immediately beforehand, and it wasn't until I started reading some other people's takes on the episode that I thought back and appreciated it, because I was just, at the time, I was so ready to go and see what was going to happen. So in retrospect, it was great, but I will admit to, at the time, I was a little impatient for, where are we going, to really appreciate kind of the lyricism of it.
Right, it did kind of drag along just a little bit too much when everyone was probably on their edge of their seat, like, come on, gimme.
Yeah, it's something, I've been saying in my reviews throughout the season, where I think there are a lot of things that I will appreciate more when I go back and watch the show again from beginning to end, knowing what happens. Where, yeah, at the time, it was something where beautiful imagery there, but at the time, I was just, let's get to the action.
Right, absolutely. So when the action does start, we're given Desmond and Kate, and they're kind of in the car going over to the church. We see the coffin, Christian Shepherd coming down, Desmond Sinesford, all that good stuff. One of the good things, and the episode had a lot of this, is some of the jokes poking fun at themselves. Like, Kate makes the joke of Christian Shepherd, really, that's his name.
Right. And that's something where, really, that's a bit more of a Hurley line to
Absolutely.
Me, where especially, I mean, he did all along, but especially in this season, he was really the audience proxy. So it was a great line, but I certainly have a great deal of antipathy toward the character of Kate, who... there were some things she did in this episode that, not to get ahead of myself, that made me appreciate the character a bit again.
Right, there was a lot of fan reaction like that, like Kate justified herself a lot in this one.
Yeah, but I mean, in that I'm such a fan of meta comedy, so when they made, when she had that line, it was, that got a laugh out of me, no doubt.
Excellent. So then we get our first island scene. We have Jack standing in the water, and he's the new Jacob. They decide they need to go to the bamboo forest and find the light, as they say. During this time, though, Sawyer decides he's going to go off and find Desmond, because they're going to need him to take care of that light. We have Hurley finding Charlie back in the Flash sideways. And one of the best things about that, we have Hurley and Saeed pull up, and they go get Charlie for the concert. And one of the highlights of this entire episode, I thought, were the reactions that people have when they've already been awakened and they know the other person so well. And Hurley has the best big, like, teddy bear grin on his face when he sees Charlie.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that was a highlight for me. I mean, I, laughed in a very appreciative way to see that, but yeah, especially when, I remember that moment very distinctly when Charlie kind of turns his back to him and Hurley gets that big old grin. And then you know, a great physical comedy too from Jorge Garcia, where just, you know, he's like, okay, I'm going to shoot you with this tranquilizer dart now, and I don't seem very certain of what I'm doing. But yeah, I mean, that was the, we'll get to them. But the first of just like really touching scenes to see those two together again. Because, I mean, in the earlier seasons, they had a very much, you know, they were sort of like the Shakespearean clowns a lot.
Right, right.
I thought, as those two. And they just had a great dynamic. And yeah, that look, and that's perfect the way you said it about sort of that teddy bearish grin that he had for Charlie, just, you know, really made the moment work. And that's something with Lost, I think it's fair to say, with a few exceptions, but over the course of the show, you kind of get some uneven performances.
Right, right.
And there are times where people really knock it out of the park, and there are times where, you know, and especially those actors get saddled with some difficult dialogue a lot. But that was a scene that, you know, Jorge Garcia really needed to play just the right way, and he really did.
Absolutely. And the majority of actors in this episode in general just brought their A game, because we saw just some of the best reactions and best line deliveries out of them yet.
Oh, absolutely.
So we have them grab Charlie, as you said. Hurley gives him the shot with the tranquilizer dart, and they take him off. Back in the island, we find that Desmond has been rescued by Rose and Bernard, two of our favorite people who we haven't seen in a while. But unfortunately, they get discovered. I know you referred to Folock as that name in a lot of your articles. Mm-hmm. I've heard him called Unlock. I've heard him called the Man in Black. I like to call him Smokey, just because I find it very distinguishing between him and the original John Locke.
Sure. And Sawyer refers to him as Smokey sometime
right
along the episode. I think in this scene. So, you know, Sawyer calls somebody... If Sawyer names something, I think it's official. I mean, I think that's the thing with the old Dharma Barracks, which became known as New Otherton.
Right, right.
That was I think that was a fan base name, but it's something that, you know, pops out of Sawyer's mouth on the show.
Definitely. And Sawyer's nicknames are just so great. So I like calling him Smokey anyway. But so we see Smokey and Ben come back with Bernard. And they kind of do their whole exchange, make the threat to kill. Desmond goes with him, and they're off. It's around this time that we find out that Ben apparently doesn't want to side with Smokey anymore, because he found out that he really just does want to sink the island, so Ben gets no benefit anymore. And there was that quick walkie-talkie noise that I wasn't sure if I actually heard the first time I heard it.
Yeah, I mean, that was sort of, I kind of felt like that was a little forced with that of that walkie-talkie squawk. And yeah, I don't know that I necessarily noticed it right away, but you know, they cut away to Miles talking on the other end, so you get it. But just sort of the idea that I don't know that the show really needed kind of that cloak and dagger moment
right
there. Of like, oh, maybe Ben's working another agenda. And that was something I think I got into a little bit in my review of What They Died For, the second to last episode, where, you know, and in general, I think it happened in the finale too, where there were things that happened in a bit of a rush. And it was, you know, to go back to that second to last episode, I mean, it's really you suddenly get, you know, scary Ben again.
Right.
Where, gosh, you know, our main heroes can't trust this guy. He wants to kill people. But then at the end of the episode, it's, you know, Locke says, I'm going to destroy the island. And, you know, maybe they were a little bit too on the nose in the finale of having Ben say, well, wait, I'm not down with you destroying the island, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
Care for it quite a bit, but by the same token, which again, not to get ahead of myself, but I think that was important to spell out of that Ben, you know, having his loyalty ultimately being to the island and not just to himself.
Sure. Definitely. So again, on the island still, we were left at the end of the prior episode thinking maybe Richard got killed by Smokey. We weren't entirely sure, but we do find out that he's definitely still alive. He and Miles are still going to continue their prior mission of going to blow up the plane. And we get another flash back into the Flash Sideways universe. We have Jin and Sun in the hospital, and no shocker here, Juliet's their doctor.
Which, I mean, I was just, you saw it in the opening titles, but just seeing Elizabeth Mitchell back again, I was really pleased. I mean, I've watched a lot of, I didn't watch a lot of it, but I watched a few episodes of V, which is, you know, kind of what took her away from Lost. And that's not a very good television show. And what's worse is she isn't very good on it. And that, again, may be, you know, symptomatic of the material she's given to work with.
Sure.
But seeing her just slip right back into the role of Juliet, you know, it's great to see that. And then, you know, obviously they were replaying that scene from, I think the episode name is DOC from season 3, where she gives that's what I'm looking for.
Sonogram?
Sonogram, there you go, thank you. Does a sonogram on Sun, and, you know, and that's what brings Jin and Sun back to, that's what wakes them up.
Right.
And you know, and that was one of those, you knew that it was coming, but it was great to hear was when Jin and Sun had those flashes to their prior life, you just knew they're going to start speaking English. Like, they're just going to start speaking in perfect English. And when they did that and just, you know, again, they had gone from being so tense to being so relaxed. And that was, again, after that scene with Hurley and Charlie earlier, it was just another moment that, like, you know, bam, they, big emotional impact. And one thing I give that credit for is I don't think that, maybe it'll be different when I rewatch the episode, but I don't think in any way seeing Jin and Sun like that cheapened their death on the submarine a couple episodes before.
Right, I agree. I mean, that was a crazy death, and as your analyses had said along the way, you were just dying for that Jin and Sun reunion. And when it happened, we got it for such a short time before their deaths.
Yeah, and as a viewer, sometimes that's frustrating. But, you know, dramatically, I think it works. I mean, it's, if you look at any romantic comedy or anything, it's usually it's that couple you're rooting for to get together and be just right the entire movie, and they get together, you know, 5 minutes before then credits
right.
roll. So, I mean, it's something where, you know, would it be that interesting to watch them just be happily ever after? But that was, again, something that, yeah, as I did in pretty much every review, I think this season before they got together was, for the love of God,
I know they teased it constantly, and we were just waiting and waiting and waiting. It was a great reunion they had, and then I think that anticipation of their reunion made their short time together and their deaths that much more powerful.
Agreed.
All right, so we have Miles and Richard back on the boat. They're on their way over to the plane as they originally planned, when Miles discovers that Richard has a gray hair. So now he is mortal, and Richard is, well, now I want to live. He was suicidal for so many episodes, and now all of a sudden he wants to live because he has immortality. I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah. I mean, that was, you know, it was something that was, again, a lot of things getting crowded in toward the end of the show, where that's something I think with a little more distance, I would appreciate more. But, you know, we didn't know until, a month, 6 weeks ago, Richard's backstory. I mean, he obviously had this, he never aged, immortality, and he always sort of showed up at key times, but you really didn't know what his story was, what his intentions were. So thematically, it's definitely cool that they did that. I just don't know that it quite had the poignancy that they were going for me. You know, and again, it's watching the, you know, I'm sure I've said this already and say it so many more times, but going back to the idea of watching the show from beginning to end, and, you know, when I rewatch this show and see Richard for the first time, I'll have a much different sense of him than I did the first time through.
Oh, so, absolutely. Yeah.
But, you know, it's something kind of skipping back a little bit. I mean, I think I left the door open for that in my review, but, you know, I really was like, well, they couldn't have given Richard that death because they have when, you know, you saw him get knocked into the jungle by Smokey. Though there's something else that was pointed out on another site was that, you know, after Miles saying, I'm going to run out into the jungle as far as I can, you know, he finds Richard like 20 yards away.
Right.
Town. So how far and fast did he run? But that's right. Nitpicky at this point. And then what really happened, that for me, what happens in that boat trip that really made me cheer was the rediscovery of
Frank. Oh, that was like, okay, and out of all the things in the episode, I have to say that took me for a huge shocker, because I previously read an interview with the actor who plays Lapidus, and
Jeff Fahey.
What's that?
Jeff
Fahey, yes, I didn't know his name, thank you. And in the interview, he said, and this was after the prior episode, right before the finale, and he said, no, Lapidus is dead. That's the last you're going to see of him. So when he showed up in the episode, I was so happy.
I was too. Well, and it's, you know, that was something that that got a lot of play in blog comment sections was, you know, after the sub explosion, you know, Hurley and Jack and Kate and Sawyer on the beach, and everyone's crying over Saeed and Jin and Sun. It's like no one even mentions Lapidus.
It's true.
And, you know, what I say is they just knew he was too awesome to die, so why bother?
And, of course, right when they rescue him, he gives a classic Lapidus line, because they pull him up and they're like, oh, we're on our way to blow up the plane. And he's like, well, let's just leave and take it. And they're like, how are we going to do that? Well, in case you haven't noticed, I'm a pilot with his jacket on and all that. That was just great.
Exactly.
So great.
Yeah.
So they grab Lapidus and they're off. They decide to change their plan. They're going to fly off now. When we go back to the Flash sideways, we get the revelation, which at this point I think all others had been eliminated more or less, that Julia is David's mother and Jack's ex-wife. So,
yeah, that was, I mean, such an anticlimax. I mean, I think ever since David, Jack's son, showed up, internet speculation was just always, well, Juliet's obviously the mother. I mean, it's one of those things. There have been jokes over the years about the show that, you know, it's been, what's unique about it, I think, compared to, you know, any show that would have come along 10 years before, is that it's so extensively discussed by fans in a very public forum online, and that it's something where, you know, the creators have access to see, well, what are fans saying? And there, somebody made a joke in one podcast I listened to that it was, you know, you're gonna find out that there's some guy sitting in his parents' basement who basically wrote Lost because he would just come up with these crazy theories, and, you know, the creators would look at them and say, hey, that's a good idea. And it's that's something I wonder about even with David Shepherd was, you know, did they say, well, let's give Jack a son and figure it out later, and then everybody was so convinced that it must be Juliet, is that why they chose it? I'd like to give them more credit than that, but it's rife for thinking of conspiracy theories.
Oh, absolutely. So after that big revelation, we go back to the island, and I think this is where we had one of the first really meaningful conversations about kind of the complexity of everything that was going on. Desmond's about to be lowered down into the light so that he can do his job, and Smokey and Jack both don't know exactly what that is or what's going to happen yet. But Desmond goes on to tell Jack that none of this matters. He says they'll go to a place where they can be with the ones they love. He explains that he sat next to Jack on Oceanic 815 and it never crashed, which makes us aware that Desmond is, in fact, aware of both timelines going on.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, with maybe the exception of Jack at the very end of the episode, Desmond is the only character that definitely knows what's going on in both places. Or we see in the flash sideways people remembering the traditional timeline, but we don't. Other than Desmond, and again, maybe, and that's speculation, Jack at the end, you don't see people on the island being aware of that flash sideways universe. Actually, skipping back a little bit, I think we kind of went past this, but the leading up to bringing Desmond down into the cave was you had that confrontation with, there was Locke and Ben on one side and Desmond and Jack, Sawyer, Hurley, and Kate just meeting on that ridge, and then that confrontation where, you know, basically Smokey and Jack have the exact same plan, which is I am going to win by putting Desmond in the cave. And really, nobody knows what's going on with that. One thing I really liked about that scene on the ridge was it came in about 20 minutes into the episode. Just that the show didn't mess around in getting to that main action. But getting back to what Desmond was saying to Jack about, you know, this different world, you get from Jack, you know, that he kind of referencing the H-bomb, you know, that he's already tried this, there are no shortcuts, there are no do-overs, whatever happened, and that all this matters.
Right.
And to me, that's a really key conversation, especially in light of the conversation he has with Christian at the end of the episode, which, again, we'll take that in time. But one thing that I was disappointed in myself for not including in the analysis, but was talking about Terry O'Quinn's performance in this episode.
Oh, yeah.
Because you saw him just as that wonderfully serene, contented man in the Flash Sideways world, but in the as Smokey, you know, it wasn't that he was just, you know, if you want to call him the embodiment of evil, I don't know that I really trusted Dogan on that, but I mean he was just kind of mean.
Yeah.
I mean that whole when they're lowering him down and say, oh, if you see a button down there, start pushing it. I mean, it was this really snide, snarky comment, and you know, and that was a moment where, again, to give credit, where, you know, Matthew Fox, I think, at the beginning of the show and at the end of the show, you know, encompassing, you know, first to six seasons, sort of that first half season and that last half season, where he was just heroic. I think he did that really well. And those 4 years we had of him going through emotional turmoil, I don't think he quite had the chops to play that.
Right, right.
But when he had that moment where he said, you know, you're not John Locke, you disrespect his memory by saying this, you're nothing like him.
Such a fantastic quote he had there. That was great.
Yeah, I mean, he really sold that scene, which was important. And it was, you know, it's a pettier level, but the fact that, like I said, that just Smokey was just kind of mean. Like, it wasn't just that he was evil. It's like, this is an unpleasant person to be around. And that, you know, Jack was able to kind of, get a little of his own back in that conversation. I thought that was just a great moment.
Right. I know. Up until that point, Smokey was just this like untouchable being, and he took every opportunity to, no pun intended, twist the knife a little bit and just kind of dig into all the people around him. And that was great to see Jack give him one back finally, now that he was on the same level as him.
Yeah.
And that other scene that you mentioned too, I thought you were going to bring it up, and I had originally forgot to include it, but they did another one of those self-jokes where when Jack and Smokey were talking to each other, Smokey's like, so you're the one, huh? Well, you seem like kind of the obvious choice.
Yeah. Yeah, that was another good meta joke that, I think I got carried away on other aspects of that scene, but yeah, that's, you know, it's a great meta joke, and it was something where, you know, again, jumping ahead of myself a little bit, but a friend of mine had suggested to me way at the beginning of the season, I think it was when we had that first Locke episode, that Flash Sideways, and you saw a happy, successful Hurley taking care of people, that Hurley would be the island protector, and I really liked that theory, and I never found a way to work it into one of my reviews, and I also just really didn't like prognosticating about the show a lot, of being like, oh, it's going to be like this, especially having had the benefit of reading other people's write-ups from seasons past where they went in directions that the show didn't. But, I mean, I really came down after the penultimate episode, what they died for, of like, well, of course it was Jack. Yes, that has to be it. But, again, that was, you know, like the Christian Shepherd line. And I think it, you know, coming from Smokey, it was a little easier to swallow than maybe the Christian Shepherd line was from Kate.
Right, right.
But it was a great moment. I mean, you know, it's great when dramatic action mystery sci-fi show can make you laugh as often as this one did.
And we get that same image too of Jack and Desmond looking Jack and Smokey looking over the edge at Desmond as they lower him down into the hole, and it's like the hatch all over again. And
and that's such an iconic shot
too. Oh yeah, and yet it feels a little different, I think, after the dig that Jack threw at Smokey, because you're looking at the same two characters, and yet you're, because of that, you know they're not the same two characters.
Right.
I just thought that was kind of cool. I have a lot more stuff here. I'm going to go a little more quickly through it, since we're actually taking up quite a bit of time here.
The longest podcast in the history of the internet.
I know, right? And it's episode number one, or zero, or whatever it is. So we go back to the Flash Sideways. And this is where one of those big controversies came in. Saeed and Hurley pull up to that outside bar at night, and Hurley tells Saeed that he can't tell him why they're there because, quote, there are rules, which is something Desmond told Kate earlier. So it seems like those same rules, these characters have to awaken on their own, and those same rules kind of expand beyond just the island. And there's one theory of the flash forward that I'll bring that up later that talks about those rules a little bit. But one of the big controversies here is that we get the fight outside the bar. We see a guy thrown down who we find out is Boone, who apparently had already been awakened at some point. We don't know how. We see a woman thrown down, and Saeed goes to help her after having the conversation with Hurley about, you're not a bad person, Saeed. People just keep telling you you're a bad person, so you think that. When he goes over, of course, the woman is Shannon, and they awaken each other, which bothered a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, well, one thing I'll say about that scene, which I do like, is that, and I had not remembered this until I watched that recap show, but there's, in one of the very early episodes, you have a couple interactions between Hurley and Saeed. And, you know, Saeed says, I learned how to do these things in the Gulf War. And, you know, Hurley's all enthusiastic of like, oh, you know, I had a buddy who was, you know, 101st Airborne or something. And Saeed said, you know, Republican Guard. And either later that episode or in a subsequent episode, the two of them are sitting on the beach again. They're talking about something, and Hurley says, "You're all right, dude. I like you." So he turns and says, "I like you too." and to me, like, they're right before the Boone and Shannon stuff. Like, that to me was a nice callback to that. But yeah, I mean, you know, even before I knew where the show was going, I never had much use for Shannon,
right?
Or Boone, for that matter. Boone a little bit more, I think. But he died so early on. Yeah, you know, it's a moment that I thought rung a little false. Just that I never understood what Saeed's interest in Shannon was, other than they had some nice interactions on the island of Saeed really kind of helping Shannon feel some self-worth.
Sure, yeah.
But for Saeed, other than I'm on a deserted island and here's this attractive blonde girl, I didn't really see what the appeal to him was beyond that. Shannon.
Well, one of the complaints about the scene in general, and maybe this will give a reason for why Saeed was interested in her, there's a lot of complaint that Saeed's true love was Nadia. So why is it that it's Shannon that he ends up with in the end, and she turns out to be his soulmate? And that was a big complaint. One of the things that I heard from, I believe, another podcast, and I actually really like this theory, and I was a little kind of about it at first when I heard it too, when I watched the episode, but the rationale I kind of like is that if Saeed did end up with Nadia, he would have been tied and reminded all the time of the things that he did that were so horrible, because she was a part of that. And much like Hurley said, you think you're bad because people keep telling you that. He would have never escaped that and never truly been happy. However, with Shannon, she didn't know anything of what he was before. It never really came up. She never judged him. She just saw him for who he was there. And I think that was one of his big interests in her, and why he could actually be happy with her.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I kind of choose to read less into it and look at it more of the producers wanted to bring things as full circle as they could, and this was a way to bring Shannon and Boone back into the picture.
Right.
And let's pair her with Saeed. I mean, I think you can definitely, I don't completely disagree with what you said. I think that reasoning works, but in terms of why they chose to do, I think it sort of works backwards, where they said, okay, well, we're going to have Saeed and Shannon reunite, and working backwards from that, would that make sense? And you can come up with a reason like that. But thematically, I don't know that the choice entirely works.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I agree with you that it was probably the producers wanting to make things come full circle. And there is such an ambiguity in Lost in general that they do allow the fans to fill in the holes. And that was probably one of those situations. They were like, they'll figure it out. They'll come up with something creative. So we have the reunion there. I'm going to go boom, boom, boom through a couple of these things. We get to the glowing light pool, which is a literal plug inside of a pool of light that Desmond walks into and pulls out.
You know, and should we be surprised, because at the end of season four, to sort of try to throw, well, the intention was to throw people off, but they said the big secret at the end of the big twist at the end of the season was going to be a frozen donkey wheel. And that was supposed to be, we're just, you know, throwing word salad at you. And we're not going to tell you anything. And then it literally became that. But, you know, I was fine with it just being light and water and a rock. I mean, I really find when you get into the working of magic in anything, it's the nuts and bolts. That's where I get lost a lot. You know, anytime you have to deal with, you know, something with like witches and wizards and magicians, and they actually have dialogue where they're saying stuff in Latin. I mean, that just that's never going to sound good. You know, I'm always going to roll my eyes at that.
Sure.
So for me, I'm really, you know, a Gordian knot kind of guy in those situations where, you know, if this is a magic thing, make it as simple as possible, and let's move on from it.
Right. Yeah. I surprisingly had no issue with it. I mean, it seemed a little, maybe too literal, but at the same time, I just didn't care. I was just so happy to find out what was there. And
yeah.
There's all those people asking, well, where did that come from? And blah, 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 blah. But you know what? They say every question you just answer, ask more questions about it, and you're just going to keep going back and back, and
exactly.
It just perpetuates.
And that's something I think it was another podcast, but they said, you know, there are so many people who are so upset that the mother, you know, it's like, well, how did she get there?
Right.
Well, but then, and how did she become the protector of the island? Well, and that's just going to go back forever. And I think the, you know, it's like the Big Bang. It's like, you know, the universe started with the Big Bang. Well, it was before that. Well, we don't know. Or it's like talking to a little kid, and they're like, well, what's up there? That's the sky. Well, it's above the sky. Well, there's the clouds. It's above the clouds. There's outer space. What's beyond that? There's planets. What's beyond that? There's stars. What's beyond that? Like, it's just going to be this perpetual line of questioning, and you're not really going to have a definitive origin for it. And even if you do get a definitive origin of it, it's not going to be as interesting as what you imagined.
Absolutely. I mean, at some point, you just have to say, you know what? That's the way it is.
Yeah.
She's there. Accept it. Stop asking why all the time. It's just going to keep continuing. Like you said, it just goes on and on and on. Just say, okay, she's there. Great. And it led to a great story because she was there. You don't need to question that.
That's all you need to know. Well, and that's something, that's a general, this is as good a time as any for me to interject this, but something I've thought about and read about and heard was that it seems to me to be very reductive about this, that the reaction of people to the Lost finale, you can divide them into two camps. And the people who liked it were people who were invested in the character story.
Right, absolutely.
And the people who didn't like it were people who really just approached this as a mystery show where the characters were props.
Yeah.
And for me, it was more, this is a character show that has a great mystery backdrop, which is why I enjoyed the finale. But I think the people who really didn't like it were just, they wanted all these answers to mysteries that weren't necessarily important to, I certainly have mysteries I would like resolved, but you know, not everything was important to these characters.
Right, and it's a good science fiction story that leaves that level of ambiguity, and that certain, as long as they set up their list of rules and they stay fairly consistent to those rules, then it's okay. And I like to liken it to Star Wars, where there was the Force and it was this magical thing and yada-da, and no one was really asking why it was the way it was. It was, but when they told us, we were angry.
Oh, yeah, and absolutely. Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse, you know, the two guys really behind Lost, had said that so many times, especially over this last season, of, you know, people want us to answer mysteries, but how excited were you when you found out what midichlorians were?
Exactly.
Or there's also the stupefying end of The Matrix Reloaded, where the architect is explaining or not explaining everything that's going on. And it's, yeah, just once they try to expose the nuts and bolts of how it works, it stops being interesting.
Right. Keeping that level of mystery keeps it very entertaining. And I mean, they introduced the whole Flash Sideways universe this season, which people are like, oh, come on, they're bringing up a whole nother mystery without answering too many of the others.
Right.
But do you really want a season of just going down the checklist and answering everything that we're not sure where it came from?
Exactly. I mean, the one thing that I hold on to is wish we knew a little bit more about the Dharma Initiative.
Yeah, we got their purpose.
Do the, Yeah, I mean, well, you can kind of do I'm thinking very much an Occam's razors approach at this point of, what was the Dharma Initiative? They were just another group of people who were attracted to the island and doing experiments. But in my, revisionist historian mind, there's me thinking about, Sawyer having been with the Dharma Initiative for 3 years, and couldn't you have had a scene in the campfire where, a growly, sarcastic Sawyer has about a paragraph of dialogue where he just sort of lays out what the Dharma Initiative was about, and then we're done?
Sure.
You know,
Yeah, they could have squeezed that in.
couldn't Hurley have been like, so dude, what was the Dharma Initiative about anyway? Think of it, so, but that's again, that's my own issue, and I don't think that should be seen to diminish the show.
Agreed.
But so we were. We've gotten a bit off track, so we were.
Yeah. We're getting back to. They just pulled the plug. The island turns. That chamber turns red. The island starts to shake. We discover that, well, at least Smokey says, hey, I was right. I can go home. Jack decides to jump him from behind, gives him a good punch to the face, showing a little bit of blood, and Jack's like, oh, well, I guess I was right, too.
Yeah. And they were both right.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things about Lost that's so great. They like to stay in that middle gray area and not
Yeah.
say one side or the other, and that's so much more interesting.
And that fight scene was pretty great. It led to, I think, my favorite, cut just before a commercial where you had right before it faded out, they were out on the cliff and Jack is about to execute this like flying face punch on
That was
Smokey.
awesome.
Yeah, that they really brought their action chops to that.
As hokey and corny as people are claiming that that scene was of like the leaping haymaker, like, and Jack standing there like yelling, did he yell lock? I don't even remember. I believe so.
He
Yells
might
lock,
have,
lock
yeah.
turns around, or Smokey turns around, Jack standing there in the rain, all
Yeah.
badass, and like, I mean, it's cliche action stuff,
Oh,
but
absolutely.
it fit the scene so well.
Yeah. I mean, if it's done well, I think you can get away with cliches like that. And with, the relationship between those characters was always so operatic that I think that moment just fit perfectly. I mean, Jack, what else is Jack going to do? Go up and tap him on the shoulder?
Right. So they have their big fight. They do the haymaker. Smokey stabs Jack in the side, which at first I was like, oh, wait a minute. Is that where he got injured from the plane? And then I guess that was the opposite side and it was more on his back. So that didn't quite work as well in
Yeah,
my mind.
well, and I've seen that of, yeah, it's the opposite side of where his appendix scar should be, but is that something like, because they used, especially in the Flash Sideways, they used the idea of mirrors so much.
Right.
So the mirror image, then it would be on the opposite side.
True, although then you run into the knife to the throat that Smokey pulls on Jack, and you see that little cut, which has been showing up in the Flash sideways, that little patch of blood on Jack all season,
Right.
which was a really cool tie together. Because that I don't know, I think I kind of threw that away as I was watching it during the season, but when it came up at that point, I was like, oh, look at that. I didn't even think that was going to
Yeah.
be anything, really. And then we have Kate finally redeeming herself, giving Smokey that shot in the back.
Yeah, kind of she did with that, but immediately afterwards. It's the, this is something else I've read for, that somebody else has said, but it's the Lost writers really seem to be a bit in denial about Kate in terms of how the audience perceived her. And, as soon as they've killed Smokey and, Jack and Kate have this big dramatic romantic moment, and I just didn't care.
Yeah, it wasn't as
Like it's
meaningful.
the it, you know that big romance they wanted to have for the two of them, which again was sort of, well, it wasn't entirely the key to the in the Flash Sideways, that they made that as central as they did, and it was something where it's you know, once that love triangle between Jackie and Sawyer got foregrounded and beaten to death in season 3, I just really couldn't care about it. But meanwhile, back in the Flash Sideways, we had a moment that I cared incredibly about.
I know exactly what you're going to talk about. Go ahead.
Juliet and Sawyer, because that was such a, in season 5, that was such a surprise relationship, and it worked so well, and I was so disappointed when Juliet died, and that was, you know, after Sun and Jin, you know, it was all season I've been wanting Juliet and Sawyer to get back together. So, you know, I felt absolutely nothing with that Jack and Kate scene, and, you know, it got a little dusty when Juliet and Sawyer remembered each other.
Yeah, they had such a great interaction in the hospital, and I've heard a lot of people say that the vending machine was a good metaphor for what was going on the island. Get that candy to fall, unplug it and plug it back in.
Yeah.
But the best moment there by far was when we realized that we were seeing the other side of the conversation that Juliet was having with herself, seemingly, when mm-hmm. she died.
Right.
And we got the line, "We can go Dutch," that just kind of merged between the two worlds. And that was awesome.
Yeah.
So, and we even before that scene, we had a couple other awakenings that we passed over where Kate again delivers Aaron.
Right.
They're in the back there at the concert, and it's pretty much the same scenario that we had when Aaron was first delivered.
Yeah, and then Charlie was looped into that as well, and that was probably second, I would say, to the for me, to the Sawyer Juliet reawakening. And it's especially because it's a very different type of relationship. Where certainly, you go back to the island time. I mean, I think Claire was supposed to be something like 19, and Charlie wasn't that much older. And they always had this very sort of adolescent relationship where they were kind of, you know, I think they kissed like twice when they were on the island.
right.
They had this very like sort of heightened teenage emotion around each other. And then even when they were both taking care of Aaron, it was this very like, they're, you know, we're like kids trying to play house kind of thing. So it was, you know, again, it was very sweet and affecting seeing the two of them back together.
Right, and some of those most powerful reunions, I think, and the Juliet Sawyer one fits into this category, are those that someone had died of the two loved ones. Right. So we had Juliet, who was seemingly back from the dead to Sawyer, like, imagine how that feels. Same mm-hmm. thing with Claire and Charlie, he was seemingly back from the dead for her.
Yeah, though unfortunately that's something that has been pointed out, which is not to take away from the impact of their reunion, but if you go back and look at it, what exactly did Charlie sacrifice himself for at the end of season 3? I mean, that was still a powerful scene, but you know, when it was so important for him to die and for, you know, Desmond's visions, that never really paid off.
That's true. It was powerful. Well, they enabled the, I believe it shut down the blocking signal.
That's true.
So that the freighter could come. And that was a huge thing.
So, the freighter wasn't all sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows.
No, it was important to us at the time. I mean, yeah. we were like, oh, a boat's coming, yay!
Yeah.
And, I mean, we learned the truth about it, but at the time, that was a big deal.
Yeah, and I'd forgotten. Oh, it certainly was. And that's, I mean, I think there's an extent throughout the show that, you know, I think the Lost writers could kind of would build in a certain direction and then get distracted by a shiny object. And they sort of left things behind. So other than the big finale, I think we've hit the major points in the Flash Sideways.
Yeah, we've hit a lot of the big stuff. I mean, the Flash Sideways.
Before the big one, which is, I think, where we sort of have to end.
Right. We also had the...
Go ahead.
We also had the Locke Awakening, where he blatantly said to Jack, you don't have a son.
Yeah.
That was kind of jarring to me.
Which, you know, is one of those, so was... What was David? I mean, that's
right, and that's a big debate going on right now. What exactly? I mean, I've heard a few theories. Some I like better than others. Interesting.
I mean, that's something I just threw out there. And is it a simple?
I mean, the two that I've heard that I like the most are that either A, David was a manifestation of Jack's need to reconcile with his father, and that was just part of him accepting everything, because they all in the Flash Sideways came to terms with things that they needed to before they passed on. Mm-hmm. And that was just something Jack needed, so that's why David existed. Right. I also heard the theory that David was actually Christian in another form.
I mean, I even saw theories of that there's something silly like David was smoky and was keeping an eye on Jack in the Flash Sideways.
Oh, please.
I mean, yeah, there's so many ways you could interpret it, but I mean, again, I don't know that it's really important. I mean, you know, David was there, and he gave Jack something he thought he needed to move on, but...
Yeah, I mean, it just kind of was what it was, I guess. And the other big Flash Sideways thing that I really liked was, before we get into the big stuff, was when Sawyer came to the hospital to check in on Jin and Sun, and we got those Hurley grins again that we talked about before, and they're just so calm and knowingly looking at him like, oh, it's Sawyer. He's
they
a cop.
Are.
That's so weird.
And that was something I talked about in the episode where Jin and Sun died, where, you know, Sawyer and Jin, like, really going back to when they were working on the raft and everything back in season one, I mean, they really quietly built a great friendship between those two characters.
Right.
So, you know, for me, yeah, that was a great moment, but it was also, you know, Jin's not just recognizing somebody from the island, he's recognizing probably his best friend on the island.
Right, absolutely. I know, that was so great. I don't know, the way they pulled that off and their faces in that whole scene were so perfect.
Yeah.
We had Jack showing up at the concert, bumping into Kate, which you had mentioned in your analysis too, and you were thankful that it wasn't his actual trigger for mm-hmm. his awakening. It was only a little glimpse and kind of got him more interested in it. But the thing about that interaction that I found the most interesting, and that plays out later, is that Kate says, I've missed you so much, which gives you the idea that they have not seen each other in a long time.
True.
And that kind of reveals itself more when we see the way things happened on the island, which we should probably go back to, huh?
Yeah, so I mean, well, on the island, I mean, that's just, at that point, so much of it, it's, we're in falling action at that point. I mean, after, you know, to give the quick play-by-play, I mean, it's Locke, or Smokey's dead, and Jack goes in and plugs the island back up, and that fixes everything, and there's the aspect of it where, you know, some of them do get off the island on the plane, which was, I don't know, it was an odd moment to me, that with everything else that was happening, it was sort of, you know, almost resolving a dangling plot thread of what are we going to do with these characters, and we built up this plane for so long, and we had our characters building a runway in season 3 that needs to pay off.
True.
So I mean, that, you know, and they convinced Claire that even though she was insane, she could raise her child, which...
That whole interaction was so meaningless to me. I don't know.
And, you know, and it was great. Just, I mean, you know, you got the sense definitely that, you know, hey, Richard's happy to have a life off the island, and Lapidus definitely wanted to get off there. Miles did, and Sawyer, for goodness sakes, of the people who crashed on the island at the beginning of the series, who lived the entire time, he was the only one who'd never gotten off the island. So I mean, he was happy to see him get off. And then, you know, and I had to, I think I had to double check with somebody when I was writing up my review, but it was, you know, when Jack goes in to fix the island and he sends Desmond back up. And I said, look, you know, did Desmond actually get off the island there? Did he get to the plane? Doesn't seem like he did. And he didn't.
No, he didn't, no.
But it sounds like he probably will because, and really, there's the Jack stuff, which just to put aside for a moment, but, you know, is that great scene with Hurley and Ben where Hurley's become the new island protector.
So great.
And he asks Ben to help him, and that's something where, you know, it's just this wasn't calculating, duplicitous Ben. This was just somebody who, you know, somebody just asked him the only thing he ever wanted to be asked.
Absolutely. His face is priceless in that scene.
Yeah, and he was, you know, happy to do that. And that's the, you know, because I already own 5 seasons on DVD, I hope that, I hope they include that, that 12, 14 minute segment of, Ben and Hurley running the island on the season 6 DVD and not just on the complete box set, because that's a bit too much for me to spend just for that.
Yeah, and that's something I don't know if our listeners are familiar with. What Doug's talking about is that Michael Emerson was on G4's Attack of the Show recently and said that on the Complete Lost Collection DVD and Blu-ray sets, there will be a 12 to 14 minute epilogue which kind of covers a little bit of what happened with Ben and Hurley running the island, which I think is really interesting. I would love to see that.
Oh, absolutely.
Their interaction there was so great. And then again, at the church.
At the church. And the two of them did a wonderful job, I think, of really, just with a couple lines, but really suggesting a history together without, you know, being able to or needing to spell it all out.
Yeah, I mean, it took two lines, and we knew that there was that huge, like, gap that they had together. And again, Ben's face as he looks up at Hurley and he says, oh, hello, Hugo. And he has that just loving look in his eye, as mm-hmm. like Hugo's the most important person in the world to him.
Yeah.
Oh, so great. And so to start wrapping things up, prior to that scene, we had what might have been voted by a lot of people as their favorite scene in the whole finale because of the things that these two characters have been through with each other, is that reuniting of Ben and John Locke.
Mm.
And that, I pulled the audio from the episode because their exchange, those two actors might have been the strongest in the entire show.
Oh, I absolutely agree with that.
And the exchange they have here is just full of so much meaning. So I'm going to play that for you right now.
Okay.
Hello, Benjamin.
Hello, John.
Is everyone already inside?
I believe most of them are, yes. I'm very sorry for what I did to you, John. I was selfish, jealous. I wanted everything you had.
What did I have?
You were special, John. And I wasn't.
Well, if it helps, Ben, I forgive you.
Thank you, John. That does help. It matters more than I can say.
What are you going to do now?
I have some things that I still need to work out. I think I'll stay here a while.
Okay, so like we said, that exchange is just, it wraps up and sums up so much of what those guys went through. I mean, and to get the forgiveness that he wanted from Locke and Locke being so forgiving, I mean, it was a great resolution for the two of them.
Yeah. I mean, and for for Locke, I think it's definitely Ben needed to be forgiven, but also with Locke, that reinforces a big theme on the show in general, but especially right at the end about letting go. And certainly saw Locke was just an angry person so much of the time, just because of all the horrible things that had happened to him. I mean, he was understandably upset about, you know, his dad stealing his kindy and throwing him out of a window. But just letting go of anything, of any malice toward Ben, which I think, you know, is something that Locke needed to sort of move on there. And that, I mean, after that, so that gets us to
kind of the big
Jack's
moment.
Jack's conversation with Christian, which you have a clip for that as well?
Absolutely. And that's been scrutinized and scrutinized by everybody on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, let's take a listen to that right now.
Are you real?
I sure hope so.
Yeah, I'm real. You're real. Everything that's ever happened to you is real. All those people in the church, they're all real too.
They're all dead.
Everyone dies sometime, kiddo. Some of them before you, some long after you.
But why are they all here now?
Well, there is no now here.
Where are we, Dad?
This is a place that you all made together so that you could find one another. The most important part of your life was the time that you spent with these people. That's why all of you are here. Nobody does it alone, Jack. You needed all of them, and they needed you.
For what?
To remember. And to let go.
Kate, she said we were leaving.
Not leaving, no. Moving on.
Okay, and some of the key stuff in that, Jack realizing that he's dead as well. And this was about the moment in the episode when I started getting a little teary, I'm not going to lie. there was some really emotional stuff here. And some of the key lines that Christian has are, some died before you, some of these people died after you. They are, right, in fact, all real, which I am so glad. Like,
well,
there's a lot of explicit things that they could have said, and I'm so glad that he said they're all real. Everything you went through was real.
Sure, and I've heard, even without, you know, there was that unfortunately confusing image over the end credits where they showed the, you know, plane wreckage on the beach, which was ABC's choice, not the producer's choice.
Yeah, and that, I can't believe they did that.
And there are people who, right, and there are people who said, oh, this means none of the show ever happened.
And I had that thought for a split second, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
And then I was like, wait a minute. They told me already.
And that's I've talked to people even who didn't think that footage was part of the show, but still thought, oh, well, they were all dead the whole time. Nothing ever happened.
Right.
And to me, I think there's something with Lost where there was so much of the show was sifting through clues and, you know, what's being said between the lines. But especially having listened to a lot of the podcasts with Darlton, you know, Carlton Cuse and Damon Lindelof, I think they were just being clear. I mean, I think that was them speaking to the audience. They said, everything that happened to you was real. Everything happened.
Right, yeah, that final speech felt a little bit like the producers were talking to us and saying, okay, this is what you've been waiting for. We're going to give it to you right now.
Right, which, I mean, and I'm glad they did. And that didn't seem like a forced moment or, you know, something that didn't fit. But again, I was happy for the lack of ambiguity there.
Right, right.
Where it said, I mean, and again, it's sort of them talking to us. It's not, you know, that was a huge concern a lot of people had coming into season six was, you know, if the hydrogen bomb worked and it sort of reset time, then what did we just watch the last five seasons for?
Right, right. And nobody wants to see that because that's an infuriating situation. So there's that conversation that goes on there. Jack walks into the church and we see a lot of people.
Everybody.
We expect to, just about everybody. I counted 20 different people and came up with a list. I'm not going to go over it, but I think one of the things that people are complaining about are some of the missing people in that situation. And I know you have answers for at least one of them, and that's why Mr. Echo's not there.
Yeah, Mr. Echo, apparently they did. I don't know if he necessarily would have been in the church, but they did offer, they did ask, I do not remember the actor's name because it's a bit of a mouthful.
It is.
But they asked him to come back, and he wanted five times that they were offering to pay him. So that's why he was not there. And I don't know that he necessarily would have been in the church with them, but that's why he wasn't in the episode at all.
Right. And it felt, I mean, I wasn't sure whether to expect him or not, but during the time that I was watching the other seasons, he was a big standout character for me, so I was really hoping to. And then when I read that article, I was just disappointed.
Yeah, I mean, it was, he didn't like Hawaii and wanted the opportunity to make movies like G.I. Joe Rise of Cobra. But I mean, that was, you know, he was, that was a hole that was sort of left in the show. I think that was one of the primers that I did write, was talking about why he left the show, and Michael Emerson as Ben sort of ended up being a surprise where they had him on for three episodes and realized, you know, hey, we have somebody really, really dynamite actor here. Let's see if we can keep him around.
Right, and I'm sure they couldn't have been happier that they did because he was just such a huge part. Also absent, I mean, some of these people you could argue about, but you kind of just go, eh, whatever. Like, Ben wasn't there. He told Hurley explicitly, I'm not going to go in now. I have things to wrap up, which means, I mean, he has a lot to atone for. So that's very understandable. He'll make his way, maybe meet up with that group later, but he had things he had to deal with.
And then there's Walt.
Yeah.
Why wasn't Michael there?
Michael.
That's the father's right.
Michael
that's
wasn't there.
Right.
Actually,
not to be there.
Michael was very, very actually explicit as to why he wasn't there. Not in that episode.
That's true, but that he wasn't ready to move on.
Right. He had too many things. Like, he had to stay on the island for a while. He had killed Ana Lucia. He killed Abby, who we also got to see in the church at the end.
Yeah.
But Ana Lucia was absent.
Ana Lucia was not ready to move on, I guess.
And clearly her Flash Sideways self was still doing bad things, like taking bribes to let prisoners go. So clearly she's not ready.
Right. Well, you know, and that's one of those questions that you can debate all the time, too, of even... So if the Flash Sideways universe, as Christian says, is it's a place they all made for each other to sort of get ready to pass on. And, you know, we talked about it with David a little bit, but, you know, the Nadia that we saw in the Flash Sideways and the Ana Lucia that we saw in the Flash Sideways, well, were those the actual Nadia and Ana Lucia, or were they sort of props in that group? Though certainly Eloise Hawking and Daniel Faraday, kind of based on that little exchange she had with Desmond, did seem to be themselves.
They did, definitely. And Eloise was very aware of what was going on, as she always is.
Yeah, that was something I was surprised. I really expected toward the end that there would be another Eloise Hawking information dump. You know, the way there was with the lamppost and finding the island, everybody needs to be, you know, we need to recreate the situation. I really thought there'd be another instance like that at the end where there wasn't, which I'm okay with. So I don't know that she would have said anything that would have been
monumental.
That wouldn't have sounded like midichlorian.
Right. It did seem to be brewing though, but you're right. That probably would have come out like a whole midichlorian speech. The one that I actually felt bad about that was missing from the church was Jin and Sun's daughter.
Yeah.
She wasn't necessarily a part of the group, so I understand that. But at the same time, I just feel bad that they never really got the time with her at all.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, that was, you know, and she was another, she and Aaron, it's funny. I mean, it's not ha-ha funny, but the way those characters really ended up only being important in so much as they were the children of other characters. But if you go back and some of the theories people had about, you know, Walt and Aaron and Gion and like, and what role they were going to play. I mean, when at the beginning of the season, when there was, you know, ghost young Jacob running around the island, I mean, there were theories all over the place that was like a time-traveling Aaron.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many theories about those kids, and yeah, they did, you know, they were just...
Yeah, crazy. Some of those unanswered questions that you just go, you know what, it doesn't take away from the show, I don't really care.
Yeah.
So.
So, you know, they had the big hug party there, which was, again, a very touching moment, and then I certainly had been saying this, I don't think I ever did in print, but we got that final scene of Jack back in the bamboo forest, and I will totally say I called it on the what the final image was going
to be,
which was the reversal of how the show started with his eye closing, that close up, and I think even the shot selection at the end with looking up through the trees and everything was, I think they really just did reverse a lot of that footage. And also having Vincent run up to him again, though this time it was a little different. Vincent
was, that's true, he didn't go running
waking
off.
Him up. Though something, you know, I hadn't thought of this until I saw it somewhere else, but it was, you know, Vincent being the whole live together, die alone thing, but Vincent was there so that Jack didn't have to die alone.
Interesting.
And I think also, though, I wonder in a kind of a tongue-in-cheek way, I remember very early on in the show's run, the producer saying Vincent was the only guaranteed survivor.
So it's almost a last final joke in there.
Yeah, but they said, you know, and any character could die at any time. We're just not going to kill off the dog. Promise we'll not kill off the dog.
And that final scene was just unbelievable. Very poetic.
Yes.
Vincent laying down, I think, might have gotten me the most emotionally out of any part of the whole show. Him laying down and Jack just kind of smiling and accepting things. And that was just, it was beautiful, honestly.
Yeah. And again, and that's the one moment I was saying earlier where maybe you could interpret it as Island Jack being aware of what was going on in the flash side.
Very true. He could have had that realization of being in both places and accepting everything and finally letting go.
He's so peaceful.
There were a few things, like little logical hints inside of that scene, too. We saw that same white shoe that we saw in the pilot hanging, although this time it had the wear and tear of being there for years, which further suggests that everything on the island did happen and time did pass.
Yeah.
There was another thing, too, the Ajira plane as it flies overhead, and I didn't notice this until I heard it, but the, like, watching it through, I had no idea this happened. Someone told me. The sound the Ajira plane makes when it flies over is the transition sound that is used throughout season 6 through the flash sideways to the reality island and back and forth. Mm-hmm. And
I'd also read that and was something, yeah, that I did not did not pick up on at the time.
Yeah, I didn't pick up on it at all until I read it, but I just thought that was the coolest thing. And when I went back and listened to it, I was like, oh my goodness. It really is. That's the sound. That's so cool. So yeah, there's that final poetic image of Jack closing his eye. And we have the end of Lost right there. And how did you feel initially after that first happened, that whole final show was over?
I was really pleased with it. I mean, it's, you know, like I said earlier, you know, I can play the, you know, well, what about this? What about that? What about the other mystery card as long as anybody else can? But really, I just thought the characters ended in a great place. And I really liked, you know, I watched it with some other people, and I talked with them about it, but we were all pretty much on the same page with it. And I did really enjoy that time that I had with the show before I started reading about it and listening to podcasts about it, where you could kind of be alone with your ideas. But I mean, I definitely came across, a show like this is always bittersweet that, you know, it's something you're invested in for so long and then it ends. That's disappointing, but I can't think of a better way for the show to have ended.
I agree. It all was great.
And I think that's, you know, that's a problem a bit for some people is I'm sure there a lot of people who are upset had thought of what they, you know, they think is a better way for the show to have ended. And because they're disappointed because it didn't end that way.
Sure. Yeah.
But you were pretty pleased with it as well.
Initially, when I watched it, I was very satisfied with the resolution of the characters themselves. But the problem with me is I'm very equal in my right brain to left brain. So as soon as my right brain said, that was really cool and really creative and I'm emotionally happy, my left brain said, wait a minute. What about, what's the island? What's this? What's that? And it started going super analytical until the theme of the show itself is to let go. And as soon as I let go of all those mysteries and just said, you know what? They are what they are. They're not meaningless. It was a backdrop to a story about these people coming together. Then I accepted it and I liked it a lot more. And on watching it for a second time so that I could refresh for this little show we're doing here, I liked it tremendously more.
Yeah, I still haven't revisited it. Kind of planning on trying to go through the whole show again later this summer. Kind of try to time it for when maybe season 6 comes out on DVD. But it's so difficult to assess this because we've certainly gone on a lot of tangents talking right now, and I'm probably the most guilty of that. But you know, it's hard to discuss this as an episode of television because it's coming at the end, so much of it is about everything that came before. I mean, if you look at any other episode of Lost, it was, you know, always about kind of trying to figure out what happened next. And yeah, you kind of, you take your knowledge of backstories and clues from previous episodes into that and your assessment of it. But with this, it's, you know, you're not just summing up a 2.5 hour long episode of television, which is considerably long. But you're also trying to break down 100+ hours of television and what does it all mean?
Right. And I have to give them credit for putting together an amazing finale, because when the hype is up so much and you have that invested in a show, I mean, we could go on a list and name all the disappointing finales now, but Lost is not one of them. They lived up to what they said they were going to do. They gave us resolutions and I couldn't be happier with the end of it.
Yeah. I agree with you there.
So we've gone on quite a lot longer than we originally planned to. One of the segments we were going to do that I'm going to go ahead and do you a favor and cut out for now is we were going to start tackling some of those unanswered mysteries and seeing if we could come up with theories as to what they really mean.
Well, I think in the tradition of the show that we're talking about right now, we can leave that as a cliffhanger.
Absolutely. Let's leave it as a cliffhanger.
Cliffhanger.
I see Jack leaping.
All your mysteries will be explained by us in a future podcast.
Jack is leaping off the cliff right now. Haymaker flying.
Exactly.
But if you have questions about anything that happened in the finale, if you have anything that happened during the course of the whole entire series of Lost, you can send those questions to podcast@thegeekgeneration.com, and I'm sure Doug will be more than happy to rejoin us once again to tackle some of those issues.
Oh, absolutely.
All right. You can visit the website at thegeekgeneration.com. You'll find reports on movies, TV shows, comic books, anything in the realm of geeks. On Twitter, you can find us at Geek Generation. On Facebook, you can like us, as they're now calling it. Just search
for...
Yeah, you
can't be fans anymore.
I know. I'm not a big fan of that myself.
You don't like that, or you're not a fan of it?
I don't like that, but I would love for people to go and like us. So if you want to do that, just go on Facebook, search for The Geek Generation, and you can find us there. To end the show today, I just want to take a moment and thank Doug, not only for joining me today, but for being an active author on the Geek Generation, supplying us with all that great content throughout season 6. It made my experience a lot more personal with the show because I started watching last summer, admittedly, and I watched seasons 1-5. Season 6 was the only one I watched live, and I got to read those analysis articles after each one. So thank you very much for doing that.
I was happy to do it. Now I just need to find another show.
I know, and Happy Town.
Happy Town wasn't happening.
Yeah, apparently not. It looks like that went by the wayside, just canceled. Yeah. But the way I'd like to end the show today is to leave you with a word from Damon Lindelof. There's a show on Howard 101 on Sirius Satellite Radio that is hosted by some of Howard Stern's crew. And Damon Lindelof is a friend of their show. He was their first guest. And before the big media blackout, Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse have said that they're not going to answer any more questions about Lost. They're not going to do any interviews. But before that big media blackout, they did record a message for that show Geek Time. And it just talks a little bit about the finale of Lost. And we're going to go out on that right now. So thanks again, Doug, one more time for joining us here. My name's Rob. This is the Geek Generation Podcast. Hopefully you'll tune in next time with whatever we decide to do. So until next time, geek out, people.
This is Damon Lindelof, and you're listening to a very special Geek Time about a very special show. All I can say is that, you know, from all of us who made the show, we really hope that you don't feel it was a waste of your time, and we hope that you spent the entire night not just thinking about what happened in the finale on a story level, but that you were emotionally affected by it. We try to... There are two feelings that you feel when you watch the ending of a television show. The first is the feeling that you have of just understanding that the show is over. And then the second is what your response is to actually what's happening on the screen. And what I liked about the Sopranos finale was it changed the experience because when Chase cut to black, suddenly... that feeling of the show's over was replaced by, is my cable out? Like, he kind of changed the conversation about it. So for us, we tried to write the last 2.5 hours of the show so that those two feelings would feel like they were the same thing. So your feeling of saying goodbye to the show not being around anymore, was actually literally perfectly paralleling what we were showing you on the screen. So if you had an experience anything like that, then it's mission accomplished. And if you didn't, then we blew it, and I apologize.